out, and the first is some questions that we had yesterday, and Alex Bartolik is here from the department, and my question is on the disability things, and what are we required to do by the federal government?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Alex Bartolik. I'm the Director of Disability Services at the Department of Human Services. And I was understanding the question around intermediate care facilities for people with mental retardation. The ICFSMR are a mandated service under the Medicaid program to serve people with a developmental disability who meet a certain standard of care. The DD waiver over the years has been a cost-effective alternative to an ICFMR services, and people have a right to choose ICFMR or a DD waiver. And most people do choose waivered services. And over time, we have seen the number of ICFMR beds decline as that funding's been converted to the DD waiver to serve them with their preference. But we are obligated to make available ICFMR services.
And Ms. Bartolik, the feds set the standard for who qualifies. Is that correct?
Correct. They set the standard, and then with Minnesota, we can apply additional standards, but it does have to meet a certain level of care to qualify for Medicaid services.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Bartolik, we heard testimony yesterday that even at the governor's level of 3% cuts to ICFMRs, there would be some that would be closing. So could you just tell us how that would work if there are closures, and then we also have the waiver caps in place?
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, if an ICFMR closes, we are able to convert that funding to home and community-based services to serve people. So if there were ICFMR facilities that were unable to remain in business, and we know that there are some, that it would be difficult, we would look to using waivered services as an alternative to support them.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and Ms. Bartolik, but in the budget bill, we also are capping the number of waivered slots available. So would that just mean then that those people that had been in an ICFMR would move into a waiver slot, and then there would be fewer slots available for people in the community?
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, the limits under the DD waiver in the budget are for growth, for diversions, for people who have not been in an ICFMR. If we close an ICFMR bed, we have the authority to convert that funding to home and community-based waivers.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund,
and Ms. Bartolik, is another way of saying what you just said then, that the cap would actually increase because there'd be more money in the waiver services?
Mr. Chair and Senator
Bartolik.
Berglund, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm rearranging some of the names on this. Jim Meffert Nelson and Phil Rivness will move down to the part where we talk about the Healthcare Access Fund. But first then is Kathy Barr, and I think Mary Krinke is going to come up with her. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Conference Committee. My name is Kathy Barr. I'm a Vice President at the Health East Care System and the CEO for Bethesda Hospital. As many of you know, Bethesda Hospital is a long-term acute care hospital that serves the sickest of the sick. Often our patients come to us from a community hospital following a traumatic illness or injury. We are actually a specialty hospital and receive three-quarters of our patients from outside of the Health East Care System. Many of our patients come to us on a ventilator due to respiratory illness or distress and have traumatic brain injury. We have phenomenal outcomes. Our ventilator patients come to us, and 100% of those patients, 100% of those patients have actually failed vent weaning. Bethesda Hospital has almost a 70% wean rate, and receiving the highly specialized care and treatment that we provide, many of these patients can go home. We have over 800 wonderful staff, including physicians, nurses, and therapists, that help many of our traumatic brain injury patients recover and achieve a much higher level of functioning and return to the community. Because of their traumatic illness and injury, many of these patients are on medical assistance, and they will be for the rest of their lives. The governor's budget cuts our reimbursement dramatically over the next 2 years. The proposed bill involving a ratable reduction has severe consequences to our budget. The impact for Bethesda Hospital alone is expected to be over $3.4 million. Last year, our net operating margin for Bethesda Hospital was a loss of $2 million. This year, we have seen a 60% reduction in our operating margin due to the impact of what's going on in the current economic environment. This includes the proposed elimination of DSH, increased bed debt, charity care, and the escalation of government payers. Many of our patients now are either on Medicare or medical assistance in our hospital, and we have few patients who are on commercial insurance. This year, we are forecasting a loss of over $6 million. This is an increase of 174% of a loss from last year. You may ask, what does this mean to the residents of our Minnesota communities? Access is an issue. It's very much a concern. Again, we are a specialty hospital that cares for specialized patients, and we have wonderful outcomes for these patients. We will need to look at each and every service and question if we're able to continue to provide this service. Patients will have to remain in the community hospitals, and in fact, remember that 100% of our patients who are on a ventilator come to us from a community hospital where they failed vent weaning. 70% get off of the ventilator. If you're not off of the ventilator, you're probably going to have to go to a nursing home to live the rest of your life in a nursing home. Few people could care for them at home. Bethesda has developed a very highly specialized and a specific brain injury program to satisfy a community need and at the request of the state. Continued existence of this program will be in question given the economic viability of the program with a ratable cut. The community hospitals also will be negatively impacted because many of these patients, our patients stay in our hospital at least 25 days. And in the community hospitals, the average length of stay is much less. So they will see their length of stay dramatically increasing for one or two patients that they don't have the highly specialized care that they provide on a continued basis for. The state will be impacted. The cost of services will go up. Patient outcomes may not be as successful. And we'll have fewer people returning to the community. As a system, we'll need to consider what type of programs we're going to have to cut and what would be the impact to our staff in response to these ratable cuts. I'm asking you today to please consider a more balanced approach and not one that will have such dramatic consequences. We were in visiting this week at the governor's office, and one of the people we were talking to said it's like a Jenga game. Do you know what a Jenga game is with all the stacks and the little pieces of wood? And if you take one out, if you take Bethesda out of that particular stack, I think we have to ask ourselves what will be the consequences to the community and to for access for these particular patients. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you again for coming today.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. I have a couple handouts that I'd like to share. First of all, I just like to start out by saying thank you very much on behalf of the Minnesota hospitals of our state. I think that this conference committee did a masterful job of putting together House File 1362. We are thrilled and pleased and are encouraging our members to urge the governor to sign the bill. The protection of eligibility was our number one priority this legislative session, and the bill protects everyone's coverage on Minnesota care, medical assistance, as well as general assistance medical care. So first and foremost, thank you for your work and your efforts. One of the handouts that we are passing out is a comparison of the governor's budget compared to House File 1362. And you will see it is a dramatic difference for Minnesota hospitals. 1362 is a bill that we can live with, and while there are cuts contained in that bill, it will not damage our infrastructure of our state the way the governor's budget would. So first and foremost, thank you. The second thing, handout, that I have passed out is just a couple pages from the governor's budget and a cover sheet that looks at what would happen with the growth in uninsurance, the growth in the uninsured. It is estimated that if we took 84,000 people off of Minnesota Care, and that's a conservative estimate, that the growth in uninsured in Minnesota would grow by 18%, and our uninsured rate would go now above 10%. This would dramatically increase uncompensated care, charity care, and bad debt at hospitals. I just would like to show one sheet from the governor's budget, and it's in the revised budget. It's on page 162 of the governor's budget, and that is in one of the handouts, and it's the page that deals with the restructured GAMC program. And it eliminates GAMC as an entitlement for hospitals. And I went back and I looked at George Hoffman's November forecast for hospitals and what is estimated to be spent for 10-11 biennium for inpatient GAMC. And it was $274 million. And the question was asked by Representative Abler, and I'm sorry he's not in the room at this moment, but he wanted us to calculate, well, is GAMC, is that really that big a deal to hospitals? And the answer is yes. And we're currently estimated to be paid under GAMC $274 million for the 10-11 biennium. And if you look at what they're proposing to put into this uncompensated care pool, it would be $100 million. So there is no question in our mind that the proposal on GAMC alone would cost hospitals at least $170 million. And so I just want to reiterate to the committee how important that hospital coverage is for the GAMC population. The last discussion that I'd like to bring up today is in the challenge from Senator Berglund and from the committee yesterday to look at what a 20% rateable reduction would be to hospitals, 20.5. And I had an opportunity yesterday to go back to our office and run the numbers, and I think this has now been distributed to the committee. And as you can see, we have ranked it from high to low in terms of impact. Now, this does not mean that the smaller hospitals are not impacted, because it could be a huge percentage of their business. We have ranked it by overall dollar volume. So this ranking of high to low doesn't mean that the small hospitals don't care about a 20% rateable reduction to MA or GAMC. This is on volume. But as you can just see, what a 20% cut would look like for hospitals, $67 million to Hennepin County, $44 million to the University of Minnesota Fairview, Children's Hospital in Minneapolis, $31 million, Regents Hospital, $29 million, Abbott, $17 million. You can look down the list and find your hospital on that. But obviously, a 20% rateable reduction is significant. Please understand that until January 1, 2011, it does have the $1.50 match from the federal government on the Medicaid program. So those numbers then are doubled, obviously, from what the state saves. Also, talking to some of our finance folks, what would happen with a 20% rateable reduction? What would hospitals have to do? And every hospital in Minnesota is a nonprofit hospital. They're controlled by a local board, a governance board, and they would have, obviously, some gut-wrenching decisions that they would have to make. And I've put together a list of seven services which are the likely ones that would be cut. And I know you all are each very familiar with four of the seven, but I think the last three might surprise you a little bit. Number one, close clinics. Number two, drop mental health services, and we've heard a number of hospitals address that issue. Drop dialysis services. Scale back on OB services. And those are four that a lot of people have kind of talked about, but I think the last three are ones that most people hadn't thought of. Limit ER hours and operations. PPS hospitals are required to take care of anyone who shows up at their hospital, but there's not a requirement for how many beds you have to have in your emergency room or your hours of operation. So one of the things that hospitals may have to do is limit the number of beds and services they provide in the emergency room. So in other words, they would triage, and people would have to wait for significant lengths of time to get ER services. There are 60 hospitals in Minnesota that have attached nursing homes, and this goes to the issue really of the continuum of care. And right now, hospitals are providing some subsidy to a number of our nursing homes. So as hospitals' margins significantly drop, they are inclined to drop their support of their attached nursing home. And the last one that I would like to mention is medical education. A lot of people don't realize that medical education is embedded into the Medicaid rate. So for those hospitals that train our future doctors and nurses, it is embedded into the Medicaid rate. So if medical assistance is cut dramatically, hospitals will dramatically reduce the number of spots they have for training our future doctors and nurses. So those are some of the things that hospitals would have to do. And I see Senator Sharon is getting up, and I wanted to answer a question she had yesterday. So if I could have one more minute, and then I'll be done. Senator Sharon asked a very good question yesterday, and that was, how does she respond to challenges on the Senate floor about the growth in Health and Human Services? And I would like to leave you all today with a formula for you to write down. It's a little formula, C equals P times V times S. C equals P times V times S. And C is the cost to the state. That is the numbers that show up in the spreadsheets. That's the cost. P is the price you pay to providers. That is the price that we get paid as providers, doctors, hospitals, other services. V is the volume. That is the enrollment, and I want to come back to that in just a second. And the S is the services, and that's a combination of the benefit set that the state provides as well as the intensity of the services. So if we can get Minnesotans healthier, we can drop the S down in price. And so initiatives to get Minnesota healthier will save money on the services that we provide. But the one that I want to mention today mostly is the V, the volume. In the governor's November forecast, it says that 3/4 of the increase in our Health and Human Services spending is due to enrollment. Let me repeat that. 75% of the increases in Health and Human Services spending are due to enrollment. It's the economy. Okay, more people qualify right now for Medicaid, General Assistance Medical Care, and Minnesota Care because they've lost their jobs. They don't have other health care opportunities, so they qualify for our programs. So it's very unfair to say that it's all based on health care providers. A lot of this is due to the economy and enrollment. So it doesn't mean that we don't need to do more to address the S and get people healthier and provider payments, but I think we do have to recognize that much of it is due to the volume. So,
thank you. Are there questions? Thank you both very much. Jonathan Watson?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jonathan Watson, and I'm not here to speak about hospitals and long-term care, so I don't know, do you want me to come back up at a later time to...
Well, yes, I guess...
I'd probably be a little more appropriate under the Health Care Access Fund.
Representative Huntley left me with this agenda, and okay. It's not reorganized, I guess, so why don't you just hold, and
okay.
We'll see about Lori Plumper, Bob Melson...
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lori Pumper, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Mental Health Residential Facilities, or MAMHRF. MAMHRF represents providers of services to adults with serious and persistent mental illness, such as schizophrenia, severe depression, borderline personality disorder. And many of the people cared for by our members also have chemical dependency issues and medical problems that complicate the mental health issues that they have. Our members are intensive residential treatment programs, crisis stabilization programs, adult foster care programs, and board and lodge programs. One of our members provides long-term care similar to a nursing home, and is on the list of programs distributed yesterday that would see a 25% cut in MA services. Our association lost nearly half of its membership during the last major budget crisis several years ago. Those programs closed in the transition to intensive residential treatment programs. And we very much appreciate the work that the legislature has done this year in attempting to spare mental health programs from further budget cuts, but we fear that a significant number of programs could close if the governor's budget proposal does come to pass. My members say that because operating margins are already very thin, even a 3% cut would mean layoffs or salary reductions. In residential care, there are many fixed costs, such as electricity, heat, water, that have gone up dramatically in recent years. Direct care staff in our programs generally make $12 an hour or less. The master's level social workers and psychologists are paid less than their peers in private practice and other similar situations. Well-qualified staff are already looking for alternative and more stable employment arenas. And members say that they simply don't know where the money would come from if the governor's proposal to raise licensing fees should pass. Under the current DHS rules, intensive residential treatment programs are actually penalized if they serve more people who qualify for services than are budgeted for, so we can't just make up the difference in volume. We also see that if inpatient hospital services are cut significantly, it could mean that our members would be asked to serve additional people who are still too ill to benefit from the rehabilitation services that our programs are intended to provide. Hospitals are already under pressure to discharge people as soon as they can, often before the person's acute symptoms subside or before the person is stabilized on medications. Similarly, cuts to long-term care options will narrow the possibilities for discharge from our programs. Cutting benefits to many of our clients will certainly cut them off from mental health services altogether. Access to services is an issue for them. The complexity of the benefit system is difficult to navigate even for a person without cognitive impairments. So the big picture is that there will be more homeless people, there will be more pressure on law enforcement, and people will be hurt or even killed. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you very much. Ms. Anderson, could you see if Senator Rosen is available? Is Mary Jo George here?
Madam Chair and member of the committee, Senator Solent. Senator Lurie, excuse me. My name is Mary Jo George with the Minnesota Nurses Association. The Minnesota Nurses Association represents over 20,000 registered nurses working statewide in all sectors of our healthcare industry, ranging from community health and public health to hospitals and long-term care, including nurses working in our state hospital system. We appreciate the opportunity to testify, and we would like to first and foremost, thank the committee members for their long hours of work and the dedication in passing your conference report that truly did help to mitigate many of the cuts to health and human services. We are here today to express our deep concern about further cuts to hospital and the long-term care system. We believe the governor's budget would have a devastating impact on our healthcare safety net. From a nursing perspective, we are very concerned about the quality of care for our patients and the ability of the nurses to provide safe patient care. As you've learned from previous testimony, hospitals are responding to difficult economic times by laying off nurses. This is at a time when we feel already short-staffed and face a critical nursing shortage. If these cuts are to go through and more layoffs occur, we believe quality patient care will be seriously jeopardized in both the hospitals and long-term care. Already, our nurses are feeling very stretched. They do not feel they have the time to do quality surveillance to monitor the patients. And we are concerned without adequate staffing, we will see a rise in the number of hospital-acquired infections, medical errors, serious injuries, and other complications. Not only will this impact the health of Minnesotans, but it will contribute to the rising costs of healthcare costs, as people will either be in the hospital longer, readmitted due to complications, or discharged early, as you'd heard from the previous testifier. Additionally, we are worried that very stressful working conditions could drive many nurses away from the bedside, which can only complicate our challenge of addressing the nursing shortage. We'd like to thank the committee for your leadership in both preserving eligibility for our public health programs, reducing barriers for children coverage, and as well as addressing the needs of many Minnesotans who are losing health care coverage with the loss of their jobs. These are important steps because, as you know, access to affordable coverage not only improves one's health, but can help reduce our hospital's uncompensated care and create the financial stability that we need in our hospital systems. Unfortunately, nurses again are seeing appalling numbers of readmissions that should have been prevented if people had been able to get the care in the community and if they'd been able to pay for their insulin, asthma treatment, or treatment for high blood pressure. Regrettably, the governor's budget will only deepen our health care crisis, and it does little to make the necessary changes in our health care system. We're very afraid, too, that his budget will, in fact, go backwards in terms of the progress we've made in advancing health care reforms in the last 2 years. Fundamentally, we believe that the only way to solve this economic crisis is to solve our health care crisis, and we believe the only responsible way to address this budget is through a balanced approach of both making cuts and raising revenue. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Thank you. I think now, is there anybody else who wanted to testify on long-term care cuts or hospital cuts today? Okay. Then I think we'd like to have more members present before we discuss the healthcare access fund. And so I know that some of the members are in caucus, so I think we'll just be recessed to the call of the chair, and I'd estimate half an hour.